السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته.
وعليكم السلام ورحمة الله وبركاته. And السلام عليكم to your listeners.
Let's start with Lebanon. The trash crisis there now is heading into its 8th month. Any solution in sight, and what have the consequences been thus far?
I'm glad that you bring this up, Maulana, because much of the mainstream media are not even reporting about this crisis that's dragging on. So as you mentioned, now close on to almost a year, if we look at it, now the 9th month that we're moving into with this Lebanon crisis. It's a trash collection crisis. Just to recap for your listeners, it began in this summer, that was last year, June, July, around Ramadan time. And authorities closed the main landfill for Beirut and the surrounding coastal governments. They didn't provide the people with any alternative. So thousands of people took to the streets, there were demonstrations, and all of this discontent was really at the political issues at hand. But it was a protest that was very warmly received by people across different financial stages in Lebanon itself. People were very unhappy about basic services, and there still are issues like water, electricity, and drainage, issues that the Lebanese government has not addressed. Now, coming back to the modern-day issue, the current-day issue, Lebanon's doctors and the medical professionals are increasingly alarmed at the effects on the health of the citizens. Protests have died down. Politicians, unfortunately, are not in a hurry to solve the disaster. We know that they have bigger issues at hand. Saudi Arabia decides to abruptly cancel $4 billion of aid that's meant for the army. But one of the cases in particular, Sokkor, is under strain. Hospital beds are full. There's been panic about swine flu in Lebanon, which hasn't even been reported by mainstream media. And doctors are saying they see more patients because of the garbage. Young and old, it's very difficult for people to stay garbage free. And to clarify, Beirut's streets themselves are garbage free. But the trash is pushed to the city's periphery. So it's piling up along the roadside and on the banks of the Beirut River. In some cases, people are starting to burn the trash, and so they're seeing widespread breathing difficulties, skin infections. There's actually a rootiness of garbage. I'm going to try and post a picture of that later up today on Twitter for your listeners to be able to see what people in Beirut are going through on a daily basis. And now nine months into the crisis, doctors' writers has gone up by 30%. They're having received symptoms of people being admitted all the time, the persistent infections, respiratory system, viral infections, and people experiencing abdominal pain and vomiting going on for weeks and up to 4 weeks itself at a time. So the situation has not died down. The crisis, yes, but there has been a solution in sight. And while the mainstream media is not reporting on the Lebanon trash crisis, it is a story that's ongoing, that's happening, and that is affecting people on the ground in Lebanon as we speak.
Now, moving on 5 years down the line from the Arab Spring, what are the current dynamics between the Middle East and social media?
This would require, I think, really literally an hour, because it's so interesting, it's so diverse, and fascinating. Anyone who's involved in social media, I think that would mean all of us to some extent or the other. But it's interesting to see how social media and how mobile technology is shaping attitudes or behaviors of people in the region. The region we're talking about is the Middle East and North Africa, known as MENA. Remember, the region has one of the highest, most substantial youth populations in the world. What's interesting, again, is some of the facts that are coming out from portfolios that are being carried out by different social media agencies, by political and NGOs as well. We know that, for example, many thought that during the early days of the Arab uprising and the Arab Spring, that Twitter was something that was very famous amongst them. Well, it isn't as big as we thought it was. It was what we call the poster child for the Arab Spring, but the usage and the impact was varied greatly. So we're finding that usage of Twitter is lowest across Middle East, North Africa, Libya, Syria, only registering 14%. But interestingly, the high usage on a daily basis is Palestine and Jordan and Libya, the lowest being in Saudi Arabia itself. I also think that in terms of Periscope, Turkey is the most active country, are using it. And Facebook itself is the most popular social media tool that's being used by Middle Easterners. 80 million users in the region, and 27 million in Egypt itself. You know, Egyptians used Facebook to create page and group events to set up the uprising itself. But if you look at other populous countries like Iraq, etc., their usage of social media varies depending on when they do have electricity. That will include parts of Palestine, like Gaza as well. Instagram is very popular itself, and it's broadening and growing in the Middle East itself. So when we talk about all these figures, what does it really mean? It tells us that the Middle East is so active on social media that it continues to trend and it's being used, but that mainstream media and politicians and NGOs are often overlooking the strength of Facebook because it's still very popular in the Middle East itself, and NGOs should be using this itself to connect to people on the ground. When we start understanding what social networks the region needs, it helps us as analysts, but it also helps politicians working along with and NGOs as well to tap into different markets to look at how they can help people, how they can create change. But for many of the political regimes in this region, the use of technology and mobile technology specifically creates a degree of nervousness. Right? We've known, and we've probably heard this week in about 30, the Zamani paper now taken over by the government. The first edition has a picture of Erdogan smiling on its front cover. So there are many ongoing dynamics, very complicated dynamics in the Middle East about social media, and this is great news from one country to the next. Even countries that are neighboring countries, the usage of technology, of media technology, mobile technology, and the agenda of why and how they use it, this is just as great.
And finally, it's always fascinating to hear accounts of efforts made to maintain developments at the Haramain. What will you be sharing with our listeners this week?
Well, this is a piece that's up on SaudiGazette.com.sa. And it's a wonderful piece about what happens to the maintenance team and how this is all set up. So the current situation or the latest update of the maintenance team for cleaning the fifth floor of the Kaaba is that they now have a dedicated team of cleaners. They have two-member teams to carry out the tasks, and they're working around the clock. And they're responsible to spot any loose tiles, any blemishes on the covering, the cloth of the Kaaba. Any cuts that happen, you get people coming up with sharp objects trying to grab a piece of the Kaaba cloth, or, you know, with a lot of people around it, especially at peak times, there can be any of these cuts that happen on the Kaaba cloth itself. So they're meant to look out for these flaws, to report the flaws, and they will then have cleaners and cleaners rush in and immediately fix up this repair that needs to be done. Within 15 to 20 minutes, they're also closely monitoring the Hajj al-Aswad, the Rukn al-Yamani, to make sure that it's always clean and undamaged. And the cleaners working on the Mafaf have about 20 years of experience. They're working around the clock, and they are ready to spot any flaws in the Kiswa itself. There's also, and this is what the Kiswa factory announced, that they have a program to sound clean the Kiswa once a week, and that's on Saturdays. They have special equipment that allows them to clean and wash the Kiswa effectively, efficiently, in a short period of time. The cleaning crews mostly clean dust from the Kiswa and then the pigeon excrement found on the roof of the Kaaba. And this is just an insight into the information that is available. It is, as you say, always fascinating, and I'm sure we'd all love to be part of that team who can be making tawaf all the time, as part of the Kiswa team.
Indeed. Hafidha, jazakallah for your time this morning. Much appreciated.
You're most welcome.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. That was the weekly Middle East update with Hafidha Rehana Omar. We do apologize there for the sound quality. It wasn't great, but that's because we had to do it over the telephone. We usually do it over Skype. There was some sort of technical difficulty with Skype this morning.